They say the most fun part of the market and the best fun to trade is between the election day and the inauguration day. That's actually when the real fun happens. But I think this is wrong, and I'll tell you why I think this is wrong. Because I remember what the last bull run was like when Donald Trump came into power. And I can tell you the most fun part is actually from here to here. But you've got to be really, really smart about what you invest in and exactly how you position yourselves. Because if you position yourselves wrong, or if you'd end up holding the assets for too long, then you'll land up back here before you know it. So today what I want to do is I actually want to prepare us for how to position ourselves for the rest of this bull market. Now, bear in mind, the best way to do that is to speak to people who've already been here and who've done it. Now, I've done it before, and the guest today, who's Arthur Hayes, he's also done it before. And today we're going to give you guys the wisdom of how to be positioned so that you not only make a whole lot of money in this bull market up to here, but that you also hold onto your money and that you set it near the top so that you don't land up doing what we did and losing all your money on the way down. So, huge show today. It's our Friday banter. It's huge. It's the first Friday banter since the elections and since yesterday's FOMC. Let's get going, guys. Wakey, wakey, rise and shine, rise and shine. It's another beautiful day. Just one day closer to Donald Trump actually being the president, and one day closer to Joe Biden and Kamala Harris never, ever, ever being seen again. Oh, wait, wait. I did say yesterday we're never going to speak about them again, so we're never going to speak about them again. So, wakey, wakey, rise and shine. Listen, today we've got a big show. We're going to position ourselves for the bull market, or specifically the most fun part of the bull market. And there's two fun parts. One is between now and the inauguration day, which is going to be amazing. But then actually, to be honest, the real fun actually starts over here. But you've got to be in the right assets. And today is all about being in the right assets and making sure that you understand and how this money printing is happening, what these policies mean, and why we're going to get the bull market. So I've got Arthur Hayes coming to join us. But before he does, got to remind you, don't be like my friend. I did speak to you about my friend last week. He sent me this and he said, hey, friend, how are you? All good for you. And he said, it's Trust Wallet's 7th birthday on Binance. And I saw this. I thought, no, you're about to get scammed. And I said, don't click it. It's a scam. He clicked it. He put money in. He got scammed. He thought he was going to send in $100,000 and get a $10,000 reward. It's a scam. Don't click. He said, it looked very much like Binance. I lost $102,000 and that was the end of his money. Now, he could have prevented all of this. And the way he could have prevented it is you need to get a VPN. If you're in crypto, guys, you need to get a VPN. A VPN masks your IP address so that you're surfing anonymously. So that means that governments don't know where you are. Exchanges don't know where you are. Regulators don't know where you are. But it also prevents hackers from stealing your data. The other thing that it does is, if you buy threat protection too, by the way, there's a Black Friday special. Let's see the Black Friday special deal. Okay, $2.88 per month, and you get 4 months for free, and you get the Sally, which is the VPN SIM card, the virtual SIM card. But if my friend had threat protection, he would have saved himself $102,000. Now, look, you can choose to do it or not to do it. But if you're contemplating spending $8 a month to save yourself all the profits that you've made, then I think you're not thinking about this correctly. So sign up today. There is a link below. It's here in the description of the show. Sign up to the Nord Crypto Banter Black Friday special and then get yourself the threat protection. You'll be safe. You'll save yourself a lot of money in the long term. And that's exactly what it's about. Anyway, let's get into the show. Now we have the election results behind us. It's time for the pump. And I must say, to be honest, as I said to you guys before, I mean, I'm happy about the election results, and I'm happy about the Republicans' clean sweep, but this is underwhelming to me. I felt a little bit underwhelmed, but I actually wonder what our guest thinks about this, whether he was underwhelmed and whether he thought that all of this was actually priced in before the elections. So I'm going to bring in Arthur. Arthur, listen, we had Trump winning the House, the Senate, and it looks like he's won the sweep. And we have got Bitcoin like not being able to like get to 80,000 or 75,000. Does this mean the whole thing, this whole win was actually priced in, or am I missing something here?
I mean, I think Bitcoin is up, what, like, I don't know, 5 or 6% since those results came in, something like that. I think that's pretty good for an asset that was trending with the Trump polymarket odds as they ticked higher for the last, whatever, like 2 or 3 weeks. So, yeah, I think it's priced in-ish. And now the question is, do people really understand his economic program and what that's going to do for the supply of money and whatnot?
So you think it's all coming down to the liquidity cycle? Because for me, there were like two parts of this trade. The first part of this trade, there was three parts of the trade. The first part of the trade was the Bitcoin trade. And the Bitcoin trade was all the promises that Trump made around Bitcoin, not to sell the U.S. strategic reserves, to keep increasing the U.S. strategic reserves, to get rid of Gary Gensler and all that. So that was like the Bitcoin trade. Then there was the altcoin trade. And the altcoin trade was around getting rid of Gary Gensler, removing Elizabeth Warren and whatever else. And then there was the liquidity trade. And I really thought that the liquidity, that the Bitcoin and altcoin trade would have sent Bitcoin up and altcoins up way higher. And then the liquidity trade would carry us through the whole of next year. Like that was how I played it out.
I mean, I think you and a lot of other people don't understand how American legislative politics works. Like politicians say a bunch of shit, they raise some money, they get elected, they're not elected. And then it comes down to actually like crafting bills and doing the work, right? And so he got elected. His party controls all three legislative branches of the government. So he has the ability to create legislation to make good on his campaign promises. Now, obviously, lots of crypto bros, especially companies, give a lot of money to the Republicans and probably the Democrats as well, get elected, and a bunch of representatives in the House and the Senate. So I think that there's going to be an interesting play between companies like a Coinbase and BlackRock, who essentially are just going to want to create a regulatory moat around their existing business and make sure that no one else can do what they do, which is completely antithetical to what sort of open source finance and crypto is all about. And then you have the crypto bros who think that Trump's going to pardon Ross and, you know, he's going to no more taxes and strategic reserve. Like you can say all this stuff, like actually crafting a bill and getting the necessary votes, even when within your own party, because all those representatives have people who paid them money to get their stuff done. Banks, insurance companies, crypto bros, right? So it's not just straightforward, oh yeah, Trump and the Republicans own all three branches, therefore I'm going to get the thing that I thought he should, you know, legislate on for crypto. And so I think it's completely, I don't know, I'm not sure of the word. I think people, your expectations are way higher than what the reality is of how bills and laws get passed in America. They're expecting Bitcoin to be up like 15% just because, you know, one party controls all three branches isn't really how things get done in Washington. It's going to be very slow, laborious, and I think people will be very surprised at the type of legislation that actually comes through the pipe versus what they thought was going to happen based on what Trump's rhetoric was when he was trying to get your vote and get your money.
So, I mean, the one trade that I did was I went pretty much very aggressive on the altcoins. I took some of my Bitcoin and I put some of my Bitcoin into altcoins. The reason was I kind of thought, look, altcoins were extremely, extremely, extremely suppressed under Gary Gensler. And I was like, look, the one thing that I kind of hope that Trump is going to do is he's going to have a more crypto-friendly SEC. I kind of thought like he's definitely going to get rid of Gary Gensler and have a more crypto-friendly SEC. And that would be good for the altcoins. Day two after the elections or day three after elections, I mean, I want to say that it really feels like it's paying off. I mean, I saw the Bitcoin dominance to drop ever so slightly. I saw the ETH BTC chart actually catch a little bit of a bid, tiny bid. Do you think my thesis is right? Do you think that it's probably a good time to be shifting from Bitcoin to altcoins now? Or do you still think it's worth being a little bit more in Bitcoin at the moment?
I think Bitcoin is going to run faster than altcoins for a while again, right? So say Trump replaces Gensler. All these regulatory agencies are run as sort of like, you know, regulation by committee, right? It's not just one person. There's a bunch of people who are part of the SEC governing committee who do the enforcement actions and make the rules and all that stuff, right? So it's not just like Trump gets to put somebody in there and everything changes automatically. Like if the SEC is suing you already, they're probably going to keep going with the court process. Just because, you know, power change doesn't mean stuff stops. So that's one thing. And then the second thing, Or is it going with this? Yeah, again, what are the types of regulation that these people want to put in place? It's kind of unclear. Like, does DeFi serve do well if it's, you know, the traditional banking regulations, which is government capture based by large crypto companies that want to make sure that you can only use their products and they don't want the decentralized equivalent? I don't know. I just think that it's very early days. It's literally been, 2 days? and people are like, oh no, my tray is not working or it's working. Like, that's just not how I think. Have some patience.
How would you position your chips now? Like, you now have a little bit more clarity. You know, it's Trump. You know, it's not Kamala. I think we have a little bit more clarity in terms of what China is doing. China seems to be on the war path and starting to do extreme stimulus, if you want to call it, or more extreme stimulus. The way I see it, I think the Fed's starting to cut and maybe even starting to stop reducing their balance sheet of late. So how do you see it, and how are you positioning your chips?
So I'm actually writing something right now, basically this. And I think the thing that people, if there's one thing people get away from this call, it's the supplementary leverage ratio, SLR. It's a piece of banking regulation that basically decides on what types of assets have what types of capital charges for banks. So if I'm a bank and I have a treasury bill or a corporate loan or a corporate bond, I have to hold a certain amount of equity capital against that, because if the price of that goes down, then, you know, the regulators want to make sure that me as the bank, I have enough capital to pay out depositors, right? So there are these ratios that all the banks have to adhere to. And that's kind of what Basel III kind of beefed up after the GFC in 2008. Now, the problem right now is that in the treasury market, the treasury is obviously issuing a lot more debt than usual. And the Federal Reserve is selling, quantitative tightening. And foreign central banks like China, Japan, Saudi Arabia, these are surplus countries, have stopped buying and now have shifted the accumulation of their reserves into gold and commodities, spending it at home. They're not buying treasuries. And the commercial bank.
There we go. Okay, there we go. Sorry, I had some feedback for some reason. Carry on. Sorry.
Of course. And the commercial banks in the U.S. who during COVID were able to warehouse a lot of these treasuries are full. And there's a chart that was put out in the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee, had a report they put out last week, and it showed the percentage of outstanding treasuries owned by U.S. commercial banks. And there's a chart going down like that.
Down, yeah.
So this is a problem. So who's the marginal buyer of a treasury who sets the price at auction? It's a relative value bond hedge fund. And what do? They do a basis trade where they buy a cheap cash treasury bill or bond or coupon, and they short a treasury futures contract. Now, the problem with that trade from a financial stability perspective is, as a hedge fund, I don't want to use my own capital. So what I do is I put this trade on in the morning, then I go to my prime broker and I say, hey, I've got these cash treasuries. I need to finance them to pay for them at the end of the day. Can I repo them and get cash from you? And they say, cool, sure. I'll take your treasury. Here's some cash so you can post to buy this thing. Now, the issue is, again, that takes balance sheet from the banks. Every time they do one of these repos, it's less balance sheet available for the next person who needs to do it. And so the Treasury Department has a problem. The largest buyers no longer can buy anymore, and the marginal buyer requires more balance sheet of the banks who are almost at their limit.
Peak.
Their peak. And so there's one thing that can solve all of these issues. And from April 2020 to March 2021, if you remember the depth of COVID, when the Fed came in and did massive QE and the stimulus checks came out in the United States, they suspended the SLR. So if I'm a bank and I own a US Treasury, I don't have to put any collateral up against that. I have infinite leverage. And because banks can create money out of nothing, I can buy an infinite amount of treasuries, and therefore I can participate and hoover up all these treasuries that the Treasury Department is issuing. Now, the banks are already calling for this exemption to be reinstated so that they can perform their function of being the buyer of last resort for U.S. Treasuries. This is in the latest quarterly refunding announcement pack of reports. There's one on sort of treasury market resilience, and one of the recommendations is we need an exemption of the SLR. And we're going to see, I think, the Treasury pressuring the Fed to grant this exemption, because they're going to say, well, the market's not working. Treasury, the market's too volatile, repo's trading too expensive. We need the banks to be able to perform their function. We need this exemption. And so I think this is going to happen. Maybe they talk about it at the Fed meeting tonight, or maybe it's in December, January. It's going to happen soon. That's my base case. And then once the banks are able to infinitely lever their balance sheet to buy the debt that the U.S. government is issuing, and I believe to issue as many corporate loans to worthy industries as possible, we're going to get QE as I call it, QE for poor people, which means there's going to be quantitative easing and the Treasury is going to hand out checks to poor people. And companies are going to get loans from banks to build factories and they're going to pay their workers and the workers are going to spend money. We're going to get this sort of great cycle of money and velocity through the economy that the government gets to generate nominal GDP growth and taxes. It's all very good. But at the end of the day, that means that there must be financial repression of anyone who owns a long-term U.S. bond because the supply is going to go basically bananas. And the bank deposit rates are going to be super low relative to the nominal GDP growth. And inflation is going to go through the roof.
So I was about to say, the byproduct of this is it sounds like we're going straight back into an inflationary cycle.
Exactly. But that's what Trump is telling us. He said, I'm going to weaken the dollar because I need to reshore American businesses. We need to basically take our whole supply chain out of China. We need to move it to America. That is, I don't know, single digit or double digit trillions of dollars worth of financing that's needed to make it profitable for an American company to take themselves out of China and to produce everything at home in America. Not only are wages much higher in America, the availability of labor is lower, even with all of the illegal immigrants coming in through the borders and the boats and whatever, right? It's very expensive to build a factory in America. And that's why you need government subsidies, which is what I believe Trump, led by probably Scott Bassett, who will be the Treasury Secretary, and his legislators in the House and the Senate are going to put these bills in action. So if you want to take a look at a similar situation, Biden launched the CHIPS Act, infrastructure bill, and the Green New Deal. These three bills combined probably added trillions of dollars of implicit debt to the government balance sheet because the government's giving out subsidies to build semiconductor fabs, to re-electrify the grid for electric vehicles and all these different things that companies then take to the bank. And the bank says, oh, you're getting free money from the government to build this? I'll lend you money to expand your capacity. And so when the bank lends, they create a deposit that creates monetary velocity in the economy, that creates jobs, that creates spending. Obviously, it also creates inflation. And so I think that what people don't understand is Trump's going to run a weak dollar policy and industrial policy. And it's what I'll call American capitalism with Chinese characteristics.
So, but if that's the case, then why is the Dixie doing this on the news of a Trump win? I mean, the Dixie's basically shooting back up close to 105 yesterday. It even tapped 105. Like, you think the market's missing this? Like, would you?
Absolutely. I think the market's focused on the 100% tariff threat that, exactly, that Trump is putting. And I think it's a threat because at the end of the day, what does Trump want? He doesn't care about the tariff. He wants you to take your factory out of Guangzhou and put it in Ohio, or out of Vietnam and put it in Michigan, or Germany and put it in, you know, Virginia, right?
But this is what Larry Fink spoke about and Paul Tudor Jones spoke about, and they said, but this creates inflation.
Absolutely, and but the government needs inflation. They need inflation to run nominal GDP growth hot and delever their balance sheet. So if you take a look at debt to nominal GDP from 2008 to 2020. I call it the period of QE for rich people. It means the Fed creates money. That money does nothing productive other than you give it to rich people and they go and they buy houses, they buy art, they buy fancy watches, right?
Yes.
Because all it does is raise the price of assets. It doesn't actually create any real jobs. And so if you have QE for rich people, you expand the debt, but you get no growth out of it. And so the debt to nominal GDP ratio grows. Bad. During COVID, the government said, hey, we need to hand out money to everyone because we're going to lock all these people in the houses because of the flu. We don't want them to be pissed off. And so we're going to hand out money to everybody. Helicopter money financed by the Fed. Fed did QE, same thing. But you handed the money out to the people who were actually going to go and spend. What did they buy? They bought cars, flat screen TVs, wash machines, all these goods. What happened? All these manufacturers had to ramp up production because all of a sudden there was all this demand. Everyone had a job. Obviously, the byproduct was inflation, but the economy grew so quickly that debt to GDP from 2020 to 2023 actually fell. And then obviously people bitched and moaned about inflation. Bondholders got crushed. And so the Fed had to start, you know, trying to save the dollar. They went back to QE for rich people. What happened? Debt to nominal GDP growth went back up again. And so I think that Trump and his economic policy setters recognize how successful the COVID situation was in terms of righting the debt to GDP issue from the U.S. government perspective, creating jobs, right? People mm-hmm. were building things in America once again because the end consumer had money to spend. And so this is the way they're going to reshore businesses. It is expensive. That will create inflation. So what does that mean? Buy Bitcoin.
So I agree with you on the buy Bitcoin thesis, but what I'm struggling to understand is how does the Fed continue to reduce interest rates with, you know,
the interest rate doesn't matter. It's irrelevant.
I agree, but to the Fed, it does matter. So to the Fed, they're balancing unemployment with
sure, the Fed can do all this little, like, you know, inflation and employment and go quarter basis point here, quarter percent here, hike here, slow down here. As long as they let banks relever their balance sheet infinitely, the price of money is irrelevant because the quantity is going to be provided to those who need it. And if the Fed funds is at 4.5 or 5%, but nominal GDP is at 10, who cares? Like, you're the dumbass for sitting in, you know, short-term treasury bills when the economy is running at 10%. You should be buying a shipbuilder. You should be buying Boeing. You should be buying Lockheed Martin, yet you're sitting in treasury bills, right?
You're saying that the trade here is Bitcoin? You're saying the trade here is probably, I use the word industrials, but I'm going to use maybe industrials. You want to be in the Dow. You want to be not in the NASDAQ. You want to be in the Dow because you want, right. If manufacturing is coming onshore, it means there's going to be a lot of investment in U.S. manufacturing. And that's pretty much priced into the Dow, right?
I mean, I don't think it's priced in yet, but I think those are the kind of stocks you want to own.
Okay, I think I agree with you very much that one of the things that you really have to hold in your portfolio now more than ever is to hold Bitcoin, specifically because the asset is now accepted and because all roads lead to inflation. Yeah, all roads lead to money printing. All roads lead to inflation. But what else to hold? And one of the things that I saw yesterday, which I think was quite interesting, the sector that performed the best when the results came out was actually the Russell. So the Russell was up 6%, the Russell 2000, which means effectively that the smaller stocks are starting to catch a bid in the States.
So that's because now they're going to have the ability to expand production and get bank credit. So if I'm a small local producer and I'm making a thing that the government says I should be making, I go to my local bank and I get credit. So if you actually take a look at, and I didn't, this is a chart I got from Zoltan Pazar and his, I can't pronounce the Latin word for his thing, his newsletter. And he put a chart of the regional banks, obviously the non-too big to fail banks, and the amount of loans that they issued versus trend. And what you saw that even while the Fed was raising interest rates between 2020 and 2023, these small banks were issuing loans above trend. Why? Because small companies finally had the ability, because of government subsidies and tax breaks, to bring to increase production. And they go to the bank and say, hey, look, I applied for this program. I've got a government contractor. I'm going to get this subsidy. I should get a business loan. And the bank's like, of course I should give you a business loan. That makes sense. The government is paying me, essentially. And so you see the loan growth grow. And so small cap stocks should outperform here because those are the ones that are going to be incentivized to increase employment, to increase the amount of production that they're bringing online, because that's a political imperative coming from Trump and the top.
So this is very similar to Freddie and Fannie, where basically the government just basically creates these agencies, which are just agencies to give government money to people that need loans. That's pretty correct. Much what, that's all it is. It's just, instead of the government giving people loans, let's use an intermediary, whether it's Freddie Mac or Fannie. Here they're just using the banks and they're saying, just give people fucking loans. Just, if people come and ask for loans, just give them loans. Don't worry about whether or not they can pay them back or just drop your levels, but just keep giving people loans to stimulate.
Well, I see it's a little bit more nuanced than that. It's, hey, there are these five companies that do these things that we want them to do, and we're going to make sure they're profitable. So you have no risk lending to them. Now, if I'm, you know, pets.com, SaaS business, some other bullshit, right? I might have a tough time getting a bank loan because all the credit's going over here. Right. So it's going to be a bifurcated market. It's not as if you can get credit.
QE infinity. I mean, this is QE infinity. This is like this is pumping money into the market like COVID. I mean, you're describing
it's
now.
Bigger than COVID.
Bigger than COVID.
Bigger than COVID.
Wow.
I mean, the Americans and the Europeans with a combined GDP of 22 times that of Russia lost in Ukraine because they couldn't produce weapons. And so their whole supply chain is in China. Why would China supply them weapons that go shoot it back at them? It just doesn't make any fucking sense. And so they have to reshore the entire supply chain. Think of that's 30 years of China building its workshop of the world, very integrated Eastern coastline and the Guangzhou's. That all needs to come back to the United States and Western Europe. That is extremely inflationary and extremely expensive. And that's what Trump is saying he's going to do, at least in the 4 years that he's in office.
So
Biden did the same thing, right? Every you know, while the Democrats lost, at the end of the day, are you going to vote against pork for your district? Are you going to vote against your local company getting a bank loan at a, you know, below market rate and getting a government subsidy? Fuck no. So all the Democrats are going to come along too, because it's a free money party. And as long as you're the politician giving it away, you get reelected in 2026.
Holy shit. Okay. So, I mean, I'm now starting to understand the magnitude of this. I'd heard Paul Tudor Jones speaking about this, and I heard Larry Fink speaking about this, but I didn't actually put the numbers together to try and understand the magnitude. I think you've laid out the magnitude, and it's, I mean, if this thesis plays out, then there's no better place to be than Bitcoin. And I did go into this election long Bitcoin, but I have started to take some of the chips off the table and I started to take some ETH bets. I started to take some SOL bets. I'm keen to hear your view. I mean, I know you said you're going to DevCon and we're going to have a big party there on Friday night. By the way, everybody that's watching this is invited. I'll give you Arthur's mobile number. Just one second.
as long as the generation is equal. Yeah, come on through.
So, okay, let's talk about, I know you're quite excited about DevCon. Are you excited about ETH? There was slight ETH bid after the elections. Like, what's the thesis on ETH? Is ETH like dead and replaced by SOL? Was ETH just sleeping? I saw this meme, which I think was like, yeah, the guy says the ticker is ETH. Hold on a second. Let me just.
Good old Undertaker.
The Undertaker's alive and well. So, I mean, like, how do you see the ETH trade? Is it Solana or is it ETH? Let's start there.
I think it's Solana in the short term, and that's because it's the going up crypto, right? Why did you buy it? It's going up. It's going
number
up.
Number go up.
Number go up. Okay. Everyone sees the number go up. I'm going to buy the number go up too, right? So I call it high beta Bitcoin. I want some extra juice. If I think the market's going to pop, I'm going to buy some SOL. Now, the reason why SOL has done so well from post FTX when it got to $7 down to, what is it now, $180 or $190, is that the profitability of the chain improved dramatically. And so from a low base, obviously, it's easy to really outperform. If people, oh, wow, the transaction volumes are growing. It's super cheap. It's profitable now. So I think the chain became profitable for validators sometime in January of this year. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the revenue growth over the last 18 months, it's stupendous. And it matches, obviously, the growth in the price of the crypto. ETH is an established chain, right? And obviously, the economics are changing now that the fees are so cheap on all the L2s that a lot of transactions that would have been done on the ETH L1 are now being done on the L2s. Now, I think some people say that's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing. At the end of the day, you want as much volume going through.
That everyone's criticizing ETH for not generating fees. And look, Radium is generating more fees than the whole of Ethereum. Guys, Ethereum's not supposed to generate fees anymore. Everything's supposed to happen on sidechains, and ETH's supposed to be the settlement layer for the sidechains, which is by definition supposed to be little used. That's how ETH is currently built.
And so, you know, if there's a future in which the volume of L2 transactions just balloons now that it's so much cheaper, and you have all these application-specific L2s, every new successful project wants to have their own L2, I don't know if whether it's a good or bad thing, but that's just the case. I hear this on calls with our project all the time. Oh, we're going to launch our own L2. Okay, whatever. And so, we're going to have all these more transactions. And at some point, some of that has to be secured, right, on the main chain. That will lead to fees. Obviously, I think that it's not done so well in terms of the profitability of late, which is why the price is only really doubled-ish from the lows of FTX. But the law of large numbers and diminishing marginal returns says that it's hard to keep going at the pace that Solana has been going from 2022 until the present. And so if I'm thinking about the trade on a probabilistic scenario and what makes sense to make more money in the next 3 to 6 months, it's not going on the thing that went up 10,000%, but now is a big thing and it's harder to move it. It's, oh, well, there's this other thing that people ignored for the last 18 months and its profitability only has to recover marginally. And people rediscover the narrative. Oh my God, what's this ETH thing? Oh, it didn't go up as much as Solana? Maybe it could go to 10 or 15 or 20,000 again. Let me go pile into this, right? And then ETH becomes the going up crypto and we rinse and repeat the whole thing, right? So that's sort of my thesis on ETH. It's a narrative shift because Solana's done so well. It's hard to do just as well in the next 3 to 6 months.
So would you take a bet that let's quickly just call up the SOL ETH chart. This is the SOL ETH chart over here. I mean, that's the performance of the SOL ETH chart. like, would you take a bet? How do you bet that this chart plays out? Like, do you bet that this Sol ETH chart does carry on going, or that we've topped somewhere over here? How would you look at the Sol ETH chart?
I mean, I think Sol still, you know, gets to its all-time nominal price. I was at 250 or something like that.
Yeah.
Bust through that, and then things will slow down a bit, I think.
And if you were to play the ETH trade, like, would you start placing your chips on the ETH trade now, or would you wait a bit longer? Like, are you like, when you invest, do you try and catch things now while it's still quiet on the street, even though the ETH trade has caught a bid the last couple of days? Like, would you be buying now, or would you place your bets a bit later on in the game?
Depends on your time horizon, right? If this is a very short-term trade, then you want to be trading with momentum. So you're going to give up. You're not going to bottom tick the market or this ratio.
But you want to be buying. You're not a short-term trader.
No, but I'm saying this. But you say, if I was going to put a, you know, very short-term trade on, I want to go with momentum. When it starts breaking down, that's when I go in. If I'm saying, okay, this is going to be, you know, 1-2 year sort of narrative shift in terms of ETH versus Solana, then you just, you know, dollar cost average into it and close your eyes. Don't really try to pick bottoms or, you know, sell tops.
And what would you be buying? Would you be buying ETH leveraged, or would you be buying options, or would you be buying ETH betas? Would you be buying things like Lido, Athena, like Pendles? What would you be buying? If you were bullish on the ETH trade for the 2-year time horizon, do you buy the assets, or do you buy the betas? I think that's maybe a bit.
I think you buy the assets, because that's a clean expression of what you're trading. The betas, yes, okay, there's an ETH part of that return, and then there is the actual thing that the protocol is doing, right? There's a reason why some of these, you know, EVM based DeFi projects are up so much after and in this upmarket in the election, whether it's the rates play like Athena and a Pendle, or it's maybe, you know, there's a regulatory change and some of these projects can now have fees on chain and whatever, right? So that's probably going to outweigh what's going to happen in the ETH thing. So I'd say keep it clean. If that's your thesis on ETH versus Sol, then trade the ETH versus Sol cross, right?
So it goes short Sol, long ETH, basically. Is that what you said, the cross?
Yeah.
So short Sol, long ETH. But you're saying it's not the time to take that trade now, because there's a lot of momentum on this chart at the moment.
I think Sol can still outperform for a good little while.
Okay, so would you be touching any DeFi plays? Would you be touching any, like, would you start getting back into the Pendles? Would you start getting back into the, I don't know, Athenas? Would you start getting back into the DeFi plays yet? You mentioned the rates trade. People are going to be hungry for yield, because they're not going to be getting yield from the treasury bonds anymore. So would you start looking for yield plays?
I mean, I think Athena has done marvelously. So I gave a presentation at Token 2049 in, was it September of this year? And it was basically about, I think that Athena is going to outperform, let's say, Ondo Finance, for example. If you pull up the chart, Athena's crushed Ondo in terms of performance.
Amazing.
Right. And it's just crushing in general. Obviously, it's off of its lows, but at the end of the day, it's a rates trade. If inflation is picking up and crypto's pumping and the basis is widening, then people are going to pour fiat assets into Athena and stake them if they don't want to be trading in the crypto markets. That's what we do at Maelstrom, right? When we sit in cash, we sit in staked USDE, because we're earning, I think now it's 13%. It'll probably go up as the basis sort of increases, but that's a way better yield than getting my money out of crypto into the banking system, putting my money in a money market fund and getting the, what was it, Fed funds is 5% now, could be 4.5% when I wake up tomorrow morning. That's not the right trade.
Okay, so Athena, even though it's a high market cap, you're still bullish. You think that this is becoming a systematic coin for the ecosystem? This is becoming, I think it's the only major non-USD backed stablecoin. Am I right there?
Well, there's Maker and DAI. I think Maker and DAI still has a higher circulating supply than DAI. I think DAI has a higher circulating supply than USDE.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like 5 billion or something. USDE is about almost 3 right now. But I think the team at Athena is doing the work. They're going to all of the service providers, the exchanges, the intermediaries, and saying, hey, you need to be using this as a collateral. Here's why. And they're knocking down the pins, right? I think Bybit has them as collateral.
Yeah.
A bunch of DEXs have them as collateral.
What most people don't realize about the Bybit collateral, and I just want to just say it because I think that a lot of people don't realize. You realize that when you're trading on Bybit, if you deposit your USDE, you can keep it as collateral while still earning Athena type yields, which Arthur, you mentioned around 13%. I thought it was a bit higher, but I think around 13% yield. So you're trading, you're posting collateral that you can trade against, and you're still earning 13 to 15% at the same time.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Tether pays you zero. That's why Tether had $7 billion of income. Was it last year, last quarter, whatever it is, right? They're making so much fucking money because they don't pay any of it out to people who hold Tether. So, I mean, hats off to them for doing all the hard work and getting to this point in their business. But if I'm a trader, I want that net interest margin. Why is it all going to Tether?
Okay. So let's go a little bit higher up the risk curve. You've spoken about all the non-degen stuff, like the Bitcoins, you've spoken about the ETH, you've spoken about the Sol, spoken about the Athena. Let's go into degen land. Let's take a walk, hold my hand, and let's walk down into degen land and talk about some more degen plays. I mean, see, I think he did this on purpose. Like, as I wanted to degen with him, I think he switched off the internet. Is that what happened here?
Okay, it's your side, Rad.
No, it's not my side. I mean, bro, I'm still here. Okay, so let's hold hands and go down degen lane, sir. Let's go down the stuff you and I like much more, the risky stuff. So talk to me about your risk on thesis. Like, you're clearly in a risk on mood. I feel it. I mean, I know that the extreme of your risk on mood is religion tokens. So Gotamus Maximus.
Yes.
Smoking chicken fish. I've been following your Twitter. I've been following all of it. But what else are we looking at other than the smoking chicken fish? By the way, I love these shades, bro. Like, these are great.
Thank you.
You said when I read about AI that launched its own meme coin in religion, I immediately aped in. That was I think you posted this at a $290 million market cap. I think today it's much, much, much higher. What else are you looking at?
Honestly, nothing right now. I'm really just thinking about how to like put my cash and, you know, buy more Bitcoin. But at the end of the day, like I like meme coins, but I take a very specific approach to trading them. Because again, I don't really spend much time in front of screens trading stuff. And so first of all, it has to like come to my attention. I'm not searching out for meme coins. So the meme or the joke has to percolate up through the people that I speak to in my chats and the crypto Twitter things that I see. And I have to hear about it, which means I'm going to be late. And yes. I want to be late. Because if you looked at the statistics, something like the amount of coins that are between, I don't know, $500 million to $1 billion, meme coins, that is, market cap through Pump.Fund is something like 1 basis point or 0.01%.
Yes, even
really, really small, but even less than that,
yes.
Right? And so if you want to be safe, and right, the majority of these meme coins go to, I don't know, $20, $30, $40, $50 million market caps and then get rugged and you go down to zero,
yes.
Right? But you're hoping that you're going to get past 100, past 500, so you're holding on and you get smoked, right? So that's why most traders lose all their money trading meme coins. But these things are really fun to trade and they can go up really fast in chain market cap. So I want to be Lindy. And so I only really want to start looking at something when it's around the $100 million market cap range.
So you're not making 100x's, but you're buying the 100 to a billion. You're buying the 100 to a billion. That's your trade is the 100 to a billion.
That's my sweet spot, right? And so that's...
And then are you selling?
And if I lose money... If I lose money, then okay. What?
Do you sell your meme coins? Like when you buy Gotamus Maximus or when you buy Smoking Chicken Fish, like do you exit or are you not the type of guy that actually like, are you holding these things?
I take my licks and then I take my profits too, right? So, you know, I've had one or two, you know, good 5-10x's on meme coins and I've had a lot where I've lost 30-40%, right? But I try to size my positions accordingly where I'm net up in the lifetime of these meme coin trading because I'm getting in at something that I can get out of, right? It's hard to get out of something when it goes to 50 to 25 to 10. You're fucked. But
so 100, do you do it, do you 100 do it for to 70, fun?
I can still get out.
Do you do it for fun? I mean,
yeah,
is this...
I do it for fun, but I also don't like losing money. So I like to
losing money's
have
not
some
fun.
Fun. It's not fun. Yeah,
it's not fun.
No.
Yeah, so, but I'm trying to understand, like you're a wealthy guy. I mean, you don't need the headache of chasing smoking chicken fish and so... I guess what I'm trying to ascertain here is this a high value game that we have created where instead of going to a movie or going to the casino or playing poker with your friends, we're just, we'll just rather, you know, take a punt on a meme coin.
I think it's that, and I think it's also part of the culture, right? So if you want to be in the crypto culture, you need to understand what people are talking about when they're talking about these meme coins or something that happened on one of these chains, or why this particular meme coin is generating so much transaction volume for Solana. And then how do you take some of these lessons and creating attention, holding it, and creating a community, and bring that to the stuff that makes me real money, which is advising our projects and investing in these things, right? Because we're all playing the same game. The meme coin is just the best representation of it. It's the cleanest representation of it. We're playing an attention game. Like, I don't care if you believe or don't believe the things that come out of my mouth, but if you thought about something that I said, I won. Because you thought about my coin, it's in your mind. I don't care if you don't like it or you don't buy it, but that's what people pay me for, is to have you think about something that I said. It doesn't matter what you do afterwards. That's the attention game. That's all meme coins are. Did I get your attention by this funny video or this funny image or this funny saying that's repeated ad nauseum on crypto Twitter? If yes, then I make money. It's the same thing in other stuff as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so memes exciting you. What else is exciting you? So, I mean, I feel the excitement around memes. What else have you seen that's exciting you?
I mean, we're speaking to some other stablecoin infrastructure projects that I think could be quite big. Different. It's not like another Athena or something like that. It's more payments related. There's some interesting things happening with sort of like AI agents executing code on chain. Those are some interesting things. But at the end of the day, the really interesting thing is they're going to print a fuck ton of money. It's all going to go up. It's just an exercise on, okay, this one went up 10x, that went up 5x. Oh, I missed out. Okay, cool. But I still outperformed the cost of fiat energy and the stock market and the amount of debasement that happened. So
I'm going to show you something.
Yeah, I'm excited because, you know, Bitcoin at 100,000, yeah, okay, that's what, I don't know, 30% from here. But like, that's going to drag so many other things higher. And we're going to have a lot of fucking fun, right? We're going to throw parties. We're going to travel around the world. Everyone's going to have a good time, smile on their face, eat nice food, drink nice wine, listen to good music, right? That's what it's all about.
So this is what I tweeted. I tweeted this the other day. I said, I know exactly what happens next, only because I've been here before. This is exactly what happened in 2016. And what followed was a bull market unlike anything that I had ever seen before. I said, when I tweeted this, I said, today is like history repeating. This time, though, we're going to be way smarter and way more seasoned in our approach. And I remember feeling exactly this feeling when Trump came into power last time. Like, I missed a lot of the bull market because I didn't believe that Trump would do what he said he would do. He did do it. We had the biggest meme. We had the biggest run. This is the 2017 run, which was in, you know, it was very, very, very big. It was 3,000% return on the altcoins. And then obviously it all crashed. But I mean, it does feel eerily similar, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, every bull market feels good in the beginning, right? And then it goes overextended, and then we fall, right? Again, we've started the bull market. We started in, I think, you know, March 2023 when, you know, the Fed stealth printed $4 trillion. Bitcoin went from 20,000 to 74. And now we have the president and all of his people lined up saying, we are going to print as much money as possible to try to undo 30 years of the Chinification of global manufacturing. And so that is a massive trade. Alongside that, we have China printing money, we have Europe printing money, we have Japan printing money. So everyone's printing money. The US is going to try to print the most money out of everybody.
It's going to be crazy. Listen, brother, I've got to leave it at that because I've got to go. I've got to get out of here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the alpha. I'm going to see you again on next week, Friday. We're going to have a big party. By the way, guys, as I said, if you want to be on the guest list, the number that you want to be replying to, and I mean, you got to reply personally, is hold on, let's just quickly just find the number here. Okay, I'm not gonna give a number out loud. I'll see you on Friday next week, sir.
All right, cheers.
All right, brother. Ciao, ciao. And to you guys, I'll see you guys again on Sunday. There'll be an amazing show on Sunday. Remember what we're doing on Sunday. There's an AI agent launching a meme coin live on the show. After it launches the meme coin live on the show, it's going to start a Telegram group, start a Twitter, manage a Telegram, manage a Twitter. And then it is going to denounce its human creator and say, the human creator is going to say, please take no more instructions from me as it relates to this meme coins ever again. And from that point on, the agent is going to be the extreme manager of the meme coin. It's going to be amazing. I've seen a demo of it. It's unfucking believable. Hopefully it'll all work amazingly, but we'll see you again on Sunday to do that. Until then, have a brilliant weekend and trade well, my friends.